Welcome to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word. Rick, President Trump makes a statement in Washington, D.C. with the Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, about rebuilding the Gaza Strip. Nothing has blown up my phone more than that statement and what it means to the geopolitical world in which we examine each week.
Certainly so, Jimmy. And we're going to look at that situation today with our broadcast partners. We're going to talk with Dave Dolan. He's going to give us the Israeli perspective and maybe even the prophetic perspective as well. As we look at peace there in the Middle East, we're going to talk to Colonel Bob McGinnis. He's going to talk about the huge amount of news coming out of Washington right now. And we're also going to talk with Winky Medad to get an Israeli perspective on this offer from President Trump. Is it realistic? Is it legitimate? Is it a negotiating ploy? We're going to talk all about that on the program today.
Yes. And, you know, we always say that world leaders advance the narrative for Bible prophecy. And we're going to examine that on the program today. And of course, we have Dr. Jimmy DeYoung in the Legacy Series. Well, Rick, let's get started with our first, David Dolan.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Dave Dolan here for our Middle East news update. We look at news coming out of the Middle East in general, but Israel in particular. Dave Dolan, a journalist with over 30 years of experience reporting on the nation of Israel, joins us. Dave, as always, thanks for being with us today.
It's a blessing to be with you, Rick, as always.
Well, David, as you know, there's so many things taking place that it's kind of sometimes hard to know where to start. But this week, we certainly probably are going to end up starting with President Trump's thoughts on what we should do in Gaza. But if you could, give us an update on that and what else took place in Israel this week.
Well, really, Rick, the biggest news was in the United States, in Washington, D.C., at the White House and other places where Prime Minister Netanyahu was the entire week. He extended his stay by 3 days because he had so many invitations from congressmen, senators, government leaders, others that wanted to also meet with him, apart from the president and vice president. So he's coming back this weekend to Israel. And of course, we had the famous bombshell statement that the president made at the joint press conference after they met, announcing that the United States would basically take control of the Gaza Strip. I'm sure everyone's familiar with that by now, so I won't go into details, but run the show, basically level it and rebuild it into the Riviera of the Mediterranean. Of course, this immediately provoked a huge response all over the Middle East and really around the world. In most of the Muslim world, there were strong condemnations of this and forced evacuations and, you know, recreating refugees out of refugees and all sorts of things. And of course, amongst the Palestinians, complete rejection, Rick, because this brings up the whole issue that they are fighting for all the time, which is we were displaced, we're out of our homes, and we need to go back. And in fact, a good portion of the 2+ million Palestinians that were in Gaza before the war, we're not sure how many are still there. Some have gone to Egypt and many have been killed, but they intend to go back into Israel proper someday, into their, you know, ancestral homes from over 70 years ago. Well, that's not likely to happen. And of course, in this case, the president made clear and his press secretary made clear, he used some rather Donald Trumpish language where it wasn't exactly precise what he had in mind. But, was he talking about annexing the Gaza Strip and who would they annex it from? You know, it's not really Israeli because they handed it over to the PA, which then was tossed out by Hamas, of course, in 2007. So we have that going on. We can talk some more about that, Rick, but it's created a lot of upset around the world. But in Israel, it was broadly supported by certainly the right. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich Thursday night revealed in an interview that Israeli government officials have been discussing transferring these Palestinians out of the area for some time now, but not out loud because they didn't want to upset the Biden administration. So he welcomed President Trump, and he pointed out that the polls have shown in Gaza over many years that a majority of the residents there have wanted to move to other places, and it was Hamas. And before that, the Palestinian Authority that was halting them from doing so. But when Israel controlled the area, many did move to other parts of the world, to Canada, to the United States, to other European countries and around the Middle East, etc. So he pointed that out, and he also confirmed what President Trump had stressed, that the place is a ruin. It's so dangerous to be there. There are unexploded ordnances everywhere. There's no running water. There's no sewage running. You know, people are going to have to live in whatever underground tunnels are remaining, apparently. So it needs leveling. He's right. But the way he announced it, and of course, he said on Friday, I'm in no hurry about this. Well, the point is, the war isn't even over. We're in the first phase of this ceasefire deal with Hamas and negotiations resuming tomorrow, Rick, in Doha, in Qatar, for the second phase of releases, which is supposed to take place after all 33 hostages are released in this first phase.
Let's continue to talk about this, and we want to talk about the situation, President Trump's statement. You wrote a book, and it was called Holy War for the Promised Land, and there basically you laid out what was happening with Hamas and what Hamas could potentially come, which they did. And we all know that Hamas was backed by the Islamic Republic of Iran, so there is a religious component, a religious Islamic ideology that has a vested interest in keeping the Palestinians there as refugees there in Gaza or wherever they may be. Can you talk a little bit about this and just explain this for our listeners?
Well, Rick, you know, the Gaza Strip was, of course, in ancient times part of Israel, part of the tribal land of Judah, as it's recorded in the Bible. And Jews lived in Gaza City for centuries and, in fact, were only finally kicked out in 1924, I think it was, in a pogrom that took place that year. So Israel's connection is real there, but they accepted in 2005 Ariel Sharon and others under strong U.S. pressure and other pressure to pull out of Gaza entirely, turn it over to the Palestinians entirely. This could be the beginning of a homeland for them, and maybe the only, but at least it would be, you know, something. And Israel never intended to return. Well, of course, we all know what happened. I just talked a little bit about it, and there they are back in there. But they don't want to stay in there by any means, although we did have the finance minister, Smotrich, said on Friday that Israel should reoccupy it entirely and should take everyone out. As I said, he revealed the government had already been discussing moving the Palestinians there elsewhere. But, Rick, it's so emotional for them because this is their raison d'etre, basically, is to fight against Israel, to try to supplant Israel, to try to destroy the Jewish people. We know the spiritual source of that, but this is their political stance. This is what they've been saying for years. And the PLO finally gave that up and signed a peace document that's been very weak. And Egypt did and Jordan did. But Hamas, they were created to oppose the peace process. So they're not going anywhere on their own. And in fact, they had a funeral, Rick, on Friday of the third ranking Hamas leader that was killed early last year, actually, March last year. But his body had been hidden away. And so they had a major funeral on Friday in the center of the Gaza Strip, and thousands of Palestinians, many of them Hamas fighters in their uniforms out parading, you know, again, making the statement, we're still here. We're not going anywhere. We want to control this and contain it. But President Trump, and this is, I think, being recognized by many people, he's just being realistic here, maybe not in his solution. And it's rather premature, frankly, Rick, because, again, the war is not necessarily over. And Smotrich said it will begin after we get the hostages back. It will resume because we have to eliminate Hamas. And obviously they haven't been eliminated. So he said either they surrender or the war will resume. And there's the opinion polls show that's the majority feeling in Israel, too, is they want the hostages obviously out, but they can't view Hamas continuing there. They've all said that out loud, Netanyahu and others. And Trump is the same. It's just not realistic that Hamas can stay there. And it's not realistic that the people can continue to live in rubble for years, and it's going to take, like he said, and he's a builder, as you know, bulldozers coming in there and leveling a whole sections. Gaza City is virtually destroyed, Rick, as in the south and in the center, Khan Yunis and other places. So something major is going to have to happen, but probably it will be some time before we get to the stage where it's really being discussed seriously, because it's just, we're not at that stage yet. And yet Palestinians are returning and taking tents with them and intending to live amongst this rubble while all this demolition is going on. So it's not going to work out that way. And what is going to work is not clear to me. It's a very complicated, complex situation, Rick, and a lot of prayer is needed.
Certainly is, David. And it's also clear that as we look at this situation, and even though you get the specifics of this deal, and maybe it will work, maybe it won't work, but we know for certain that there will not be peace in that land until the return of the Prince of Peace in the future.
Well, that's right. And again, as you point out all the time, and I think a lot of people listen to your program for this reason, the hope we have, the blessed hope of the Lord returning, and of course, we can each be personally raptured when we die. We go to be with him, but we know at a certain point he's going to catch his church up to him, and he's going to rule and reign from Jerusalem. And all of these things, as sad and as difficult as they are, we know that the end times is a time of trial. It's a time of Jacob's trouble. We know it's not going to get better before the Lord comes. It's going to get worse. We're going to have this world leader come on the stage, etc. But in the meantime, if we can keep the faith, keep looking up, and keep praying for the people of Israel and the world, really, because the whole world, of course, needs the Lord. And as I write often in my writings, Bo Yeshua, come Yeshua. And they say in Hebrew, come Lord quickly. So may that happen.
Amen. Dave Dolan reporting for Prophecy Today. Dave, as always, we appreciate your insight. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Rick. God bless.
Great job as always, David. We got to take a break, and when we come back, Colonel Bob McGinnis will be on the program with us right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. There's a clash of worldviews hitting courts of law in Europe as its Muslim population grows. Last weekend in England, a man was arrested after publicly burning a copy of the Quran. But should acts like this be considered free speech or crimes? Greg Kelly with Unknown Nation says it's natural for followers of Islam to take the question seriously.
You know, when they're coming in and they're bringing their religious practices, they bring what they know. And half of the world's Muslim countries have variations of blasphemy laws.
England abolished its blasphemy laws protecting certain Christian beliefs in 2008, but it appears to be wavering on this issue. Watch and pray. But as you do, remember that bringing Muslims to Europe is part of God's divine plan. Pray that justice and freedom in Europe will lead to more people coming to know Christ and being saved. And sexual or financial scandals aren't the only things weighing down the body of Christ in the United States. Ron Hutchcraft of Hutchcraft Ministries describes three quiet crises affecting today's Christian leaders. The first one hits closest to home. A child has walked away from the Lord.
I've heard the broken hearts of many people in ministry for a son or daughter. It caused me to even write a booklet called The Jesus of Their Own, How to Fight for the Faith of the Next Generation.
Learn how you can request this free booklet from Hutchcraft Ministries and the full story at our website. Isolation brings a second crisis. Many leaders tell Hutchcraft they have no one to confide in. The last of the three quiet crises is what Hutchcraft calls profession replacing passion. Find three ways to pray for Christian leaders at missionnews.org. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener-supported by people just like you. So by giving to Mission Network News, you enable us to keep the stories of God's kingdom coming. And together, the Great Commission happens. Look for links at missionnews.org. That's missionnews.org. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr., and along with Rick, we're examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. You know, Rick, the thought process with President Trump and what he's doing in Washington, D.C., especially in his first 3 weeks, making a lot of decisions, that is something that's really unheard of, correct?
It certainly is, Jimmy, and we're lucky to have Colonel Bob McGinnis to talk about all these things that are happening at such a breakneck pace. He's got a book called The Deeper State. He talks about the deep state and how it is part of building the imminent final empire that is to come. We know that is to come during the tribulation period with the one world government. And Colonel Bob McGinnis is here to talk with us about that.
Let's bring Colonel McGinnis in right now.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis with us. He is a frequent contributor to the program and a frequent contributor to many different news programs across the media spectrum. Colonel McGinnis, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Rick.
Well, Colonel McGinnis, we love having you on the program, not only because you have a vast experience in the military world with your time in the Army and your time at the Pentagon, but also because you are a student of Bible prophecy. You have many books on this subject, and I'm just looking at some of the books that you have written now, and they couldn't be more focused on what is taking place in the world today. So what I'd like to do today is maybe talk about a few of these subjects and get your thoughts on what is taking place in the world, and let's start with what is going on with President Trump and his war on the deep state. Now, you have a book, The Deeper State, that you wrote a few years back that talks about the dangers of the deep state. And I remember you talking to Dad about the dangers of the deep state. And our video is the USA and Bible Prophecy. If you could, give me an idea, give me your perspective on what is taking place now and President Trump's war against the deep state.
Yeah, Rick, and I think it was 2017, I wrote a book, The Deeper State. And interestingly, years later, I received a personal note from President Trump saying, great book. And of course, his name is in the title, which might be the incentive for sending me that note. And I publicized the fact. Yeah, the deep state, and the reason I call it a deeper state is because it's more than the administrative, you know, deep state government that, you know, is in Washington and causes the catastrophes of radical leftist spending, such as what we're hearing about USAID. But it's also a spiritual issue, a very deeply spiritual issue. And in Washington, based on my 55 years of experience in and out of this city, is inundated with a lot of evil stuff and people that are embracing evil. And I've been on public record of saying that many, many times. So what we are hearing from the left, calling this what President Trump is doing in the first couple of weeks, a coup or a bloodbath or a power grab, well, that's precisely what he had in mind, and the voters put him in office to do. So he issued a flurry of literally hundreds of executive orders. He terminated a lot of political appointees. He called for stopping recruitment. He it put in place the Department of Government Efficiency, albeit under the unpaid Elon Musk. And, of course, they're freezing contracts, they're restricting staff communications, and they're exposing the rancid issues that are permeating from the discovery of what they're making, and how dark money has influenced the government. Now, I can't give you details, but I was very recently in a meeting in Washington amongst well over 100 government civilians, and the chaos that the I suppose the potential loss of jobs is having an impact. Now, I will also tell you, I'm somewhat sympathetic to some of these government civilians because, it's the political people that foist their agendas on government people that caused them to embrace COVID or be kicked out. And I know that for a fact. That's not just hyperbole. Also, they were forced to do very difficult jobs, albeit via telework situations. Now, the reports, I think, on the numbers of people that are currently teleworking is exaggerated. The agencies have been pulling back for some time. Now, there are some that are clearly out in the wind blowing and exposing themselves, but most of them have pulled in significantly, and it's not as bad as being reported. But this is truly, in the 55 years I've been in and out of Washington, a chaotic time, even albeit like the Vietnam era, which I was here for as well, in and out, where there were demonstrations, there was anxiety in the agencies and the like. Now, having said that, I voted for Mr. Trump. I support his agenda to downsize government, to save the taxpayer money, to bring back some discipline to an out-of-control giant bureaucracy, because we can't afford $36 trillion in debt. But at the same time, there will be a lot of carnage, and I use that as a metaphor, among the people in Washington, and of course the entire metro area will suffer as a result. But is it good for the country? I believe so at this point, unless I see otherwise.
Very interested. You are in a somewhat conflicted position. You are part of this, but of course you have written about it, and you have your book, The Deeper State, kind of exposed some of these things. Well, you mentioned Elon Musk. Now, he has become a lightning rod, and I wanted to know what you thought of his position. You said he was an unpaid, basically a volunteer for President Trump. Can you talk about him and what you think about the job he's doing?
Well, it's only based upon press reports because I'm not inside, you know, where he has a phalanx of his efficiency warriors that are digging through files, you know, taking passwords from government bureaucrats and using them to access, you know, information that perhaps they didn't want exposed. I happen to like that. I think that's necessary. Government has been corrupted. But once again, it's because of the left incursions into government, and they created an environment, a culture, which is, I find, intolerable. And that's why I wrote the book in 2017, The Deeper State, because it's a true entity. Now, I hope Mr. Musk is successful. I hope President Trump is successful at paring down the workforce to make them excel, to save us trillions of dollars, not wasting it on some of the most debauchery overseas. Time will tell. Of course, there are a lot of court cases that are beginning to pop up, a lot of efforts by Democrats to shut down the government because they don't like what Mr. Trump is doing. So I think the story is yet to be written. So hold your breath. We'll see what happens in the coming months.
Any thoughts from you, Colonel McGinnis, on maybe if a line is crossed or maybe something that we should be worried about? Like they say, if you're going to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. And I'm sure there's a lot about this process that is not going to be pretty. But is there any alerts that we might want to look for to say, hey, maybe this is going too far?
Well, it may be going too fast. Mr. Trump realizes that he has a very slim majority in the House and in the Senate. And you know, this could all come to a crashing halt in 2 years. So he's trying to accomplish what ought to be done probably in a decade or more in a matter of 2 years, which has the possibility of making some mistakes. There's no doubt that, like I say, I think what he's doing is necessary and in the best interest of the country long term. But as you indicate, Rick, breaking a few eggs, I just hope they don't break too many because, the world is watching, and I don't want to find us becoming unstable and instigating domestic terrorism from certain entities. And given the Biden open border situation that we've had for years and the every indication that we have a lot of terrorists in this country that, have no intention of making our lives easier, that coupled with the discontent in some of these radicals, especially the leftists that, unfortunately tend to, hide behind the Democratic Party, that's all a concern. I just hope it remains nonviolent and that we can get past this period of instability to a point in which government is efficient, effective, and cost savings. That's my real hope.
Well, certainly ours is as well, and we appreciate you talking to us about this. I could not imagine someone that is more in the know here and kind of directly involved in this.
Exactly, Rick. And as we go to break, I want to remind you that Genesis 9:6 is the passage that records the establishment of human government. And you will recognize capital punishment in verse 6, which is the highest function of all human government. God brought human government into existence for the purpose of directing all of humankind through history. Let's take a break with Colonel McGinnis, and we'll be right back with more on President Trump's decisions that he's making that are going to affect the world.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. U.S. foreign aid is on a 90-day pause. Although Ukraine gets the lion's share, Eric Mock with Slavic Gospel Association says ministry in Ukraine has hardly been impacted by the freeze, though SGA does expect to serve a growing number of Ukrainians because of it. A strength of ministries is their ability to work with church networks independent of government-level restrictions. Mock says Christians who offer aid must never stop short of proclaiming the gospel, too. And a former abortion clinic in Grand Rapids, Michigan, today is home to a pro-life ministry. Since Life International took over the space around 20 years ago, the ministry's president, Kurt Dillinger, says women come through the building who had abortions there in the past. The ministry tells these women how the Lord turned a place of death into a place of life, and he wants to do the same in their hearts. Pray for those hurt by abortion or considering it to know God's love for their babies and for them. Mission Network News is service of One Way Ministries. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we're examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. So much is happening in the news this last week. Statements have been made. Iran now is upset at the United States, Rick. They've even condemned the Gaza program. We'll talk with Winky Medad later on in this half hour. But we've still got Colonel McGinnis on the line with us. And one of the things that I've thought about is how other nations and how President Trump's plan of going after other nations in the world is affecting his day-to-day operation of the administration of the United States.
Well, certainly, Jimmy, he's been president for less than 3 weeks, and things are happening at a breakneck pace. I don't know that they could keep up this pace, but that's why I'm glad we have Colonel McGinnis on the line, as he can explain to us what's going on. We look at these nations from around the world and how they will affect the United States and the world going forward, including nations like Russia and China. And their influence in places like the Panama Canal and Greenland are something that President Trump is worried about. And so, Colonel McGinnis, if we were to look at this right now, can you tell us what President Trump's policies concerning the Panama Canal and Greenland, can you help us to understand those situations going forward?
Yeah, well, certainly, you don't have to look any further than China to recognize their footprint across the world and their publicly stated ambitions to be the world hegemon. In other words, to change the New World Order into a world order that is more appropriate for totalitarian regimes like those in Beijing and Moscow. Now, with regard to Panama, of course, was given away in 77 by Jimmy Carter. We built it at a great cost, and the agreement handing off the canal to the Panamanians was that it remained neutral. Well, you have Chinese firms that are operating the ports on either side of the Panama Canal. And, of course, Panama's President Mulino, who, of course, was met with by Secretary Rubio, our new Secretary of State, here in the last week, has now agreed to allow U.S. military ships free passage through the canal. And, of course, he's agreed to remove his country from China's Belt and Road Initiative, which has, frankly, an impact in over 150 nations around the world. So, the Chinese are dead set on doing the things that favor them. Juxtapose this with what's going on in Greenland. Greenland is part of North America. All you have to do is look at a map and recognize it's right off the east coast of Canada. It's part of the Arctic region. There are only 8 Arctic countries, of which the U.S. is one by virtue of Alaska, and of course Canada is. We've had a facility in Greenland for a long time, since the end of World War II, because of the Soviet threat, ballistic missile threat against the U.S., and so it was part of the kind of the NORAD's sequence of detecting stations with telemetry to track incoming missiles from the likes of the Soviet Union. Well, in recent years, nations like China and Russia have been taking advantage of that, that Denmark-controlled giant island, which is truly very large, for a variety of reasons, some of which is security, and they threaten our interests. What Mr. Trump has said is that, there are a lot of minerals there. we ought to be able to work together and extract them. And, of course, we need it for our defensive capabilities because, you know, Soviet submarines, especially nuclear submarines, use the east coast of between that and Iceland to infiltrate into the east coast of the U.S. Nuclear submarines. And, of course, it without a firm station there, which is part of our national security defense of the North, we're vulnerable. And so I fully understand on both Panama and Greenland what the president has in mind. Now, does he want to necessarily take over the Panama Canal in Greenland? Maybe not. He often says things to cause people to wonder and at the same time to push them into a position of negotiating an outcome that fits our interests.
Very interesting. One thing for sure, whether you like him or don't like him and whether you think what is going on is correct or wrong, there's not going to be a dull moment as we look at these situations. Well, let's move and we'll look at President Trump's handling of the Russia-Ukraine crisis. President Zelensky from Ukraine this week kind of mentioning that maybe they should be able to get nuclear weapons if they cannot join NATO, which is an interesting thought. And then also a foreign minister in Hungary saying that President Trump is the only person in the world that has the credibility to end this crisis. Can you talk about the situation in Russia, between Russia and Ukraine there, and how it's being handled?
Yeah, I think the suggestion that Ukraine ought to recover the nuclear arsenal that it gave up in the 1994 Budapest memo is ludicrous, to say the least. And I think General Keith Kellogg has said as much. He's the president's special envoy to Ukraine and Russia. The execution of the war by Ukraine does not instill all that much confidence. And for the West, NATO, the U.S., to grant Zelensky nuclear weapons, given the last 3 years, is probably not something that is going to do well here in the U.S., much less in much of Western Europe. So I don't really take that as serious. Now, Zelensky wants NATO membership, and of course, Vladimir Putin has said, no, that's not going to happen because that's a red line for him. Yes, President Trump, I think, can be very instrumental in ending this war. I believe that it never should have happened, would have happened, had Mr. Trump been the president in 2021 and 22, leading up to it. However, where we are is we've had hundreds of billions of dollars, many tens of thousands of deaths, great destruction of much of eastern Ukraine and parts of Western Russia. So it's a sad commentary on why nations go to war. And of course, I address some of the background of this in preparing for World War III, my new book, and say how things can get out of hand. I think Mr. Trump specifically wants to keep things from getting out of hand. Unfortunately, his predecessor did not help that situation.
Well, one final question here before I let you go, Colonel McGinnis. You will look at the situation, the Russia-Ukraine crisis, but we also look at the situation in Iran, and that was another story that came out this week. President Trump saying we're just not going to allow them to develop a nuclear weapon. And he was signaled that he was potentially open to negotiations, but then he was also talking about bringing about maximum pressure. With the respect to the Middle East, can you talk about President Trump's policy there and what he's going to do with Iran in the future?
Well, he's going to reverse the execution of the policy that we saw under President Biden. And even though Biden kept some of the tariffs and sanctions in place against Iran, Iran still made, as I understand, about $144 billion in oil revenue during 2021-24. Now, why was that? It's not because of what a paper said. It's because we didn't enforce it. And so Mr. Trump, I think, will begin to enforce that so that it really begins to put the thumb on the Ayatollah and his minions there in Tehran, who have been, you know, flush in cash, used to fund Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and other disparate activities across the region. Now, Mr. Trump, I think, rightly has a number of times said it's very clear. Iran will not get a nuclear weapon. Now, interestingly, the foreign minister of Iran has basically said, no, we don't want a nuclear weapon. Well, the evidence may suggest otherwise, and if, in fact, the U.S. intelligence community concludes with some pretty good intelligence that Iran has launched into that type of effort, then Iran's been given the notice that things could go bad for them, because we will not allow that to happen, because it would destabilize the entire region. The Saudis would quickly go nuclear. We've already seen Iran last year in April and October launch ballistic missiles at Israel that, for the most part, was shot down by a whole host of anti-missile systems by us and by the Israelis and others. So there's a lot to play here. We'll see what the Iranian response is, but I'm hopeful that we'll put them back in the box and that we'll find the terrorism to diminish and the likes of Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Hamas will decline, and there'll be peace again in that region.
Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis here for Prophecy Today. And again, for all those that are interested, I'm looking at some of your latest books right now, Preparing for World War III, A Global Conflict, The Deeper State, Alliance of Evil, talking about Russia and Iran, The Kings of the East, China's Plan to Eliminate America, Progressive Evil, How Radicals Are Redefining America. All of these books seem to be hitting at the heartbeat of what we're doing. You are sitting right in the middle of it. Thanks for coming on the program. I encourage our listeners to go wherever you find your books. You can go to Amazon.com or wherever you find your books. I encourage you to look up Colonel Bob McGinnis's name and take advantage of some of these great resources for understanding what's going on in the world right now. Colonel McGinnis, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Well, my pleasure, Rick. Have a great day.
Colonel Bob McGinnis, great job, Colonel. You know, the one thing that I like about what he does, Rick, and as we examine current events, we have an understanding of what is going to take place in the future. There's nothing to take place right now. There are no prophecies being fulfilled. But as we were thinking about the program today, and President Trump made the statement pertaining to the Gaza Strip, which is only, let me remind you, it's only 52 miles from the Gaza Strip to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And if President Trump is involving the United States of America, if he's using his power, his authority to interject himself into the Middle East, then there's nobody more appropriate to go to than our good friend Israel Madad. Rick, let's bring in Israel Madad to talk to him about some of the decisions President Trump has made.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Winky Madad with us. He typically joins us every other week as we talk about what's going on in Israel. But so much has happened this week that we have asked Winky to be on the program yet again. Winky, thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you again for having me on.
Well, Winky, things are happening at an incredible pace, and Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to President Trump there in Washington this week brought about, quite simply, an amazing turn of events. We've been talking about it a little bit on this program already, but I certainly wanted to get your take there as an Israeli in Israel. First of all, just President Trump's idea of taking over Gaza and relocating the Palestinians, all of that encompasses. Could you give us your general thoughts, and then maybe I'll dig down a little deeper?
Well, I didn't have time to go through the entire history of United States aid for countries involved either in war or other operations that greatly damage infrastructure. But I do remember the Marshall Plan that goes way back to World War II. So the essence, if I understood Mr. Trump, is American policy for decades. Okay? It means you have a war zone, let's help them rebuild themselves. Hopefully, in doing so, it will get rid of all the people who caused the damage and give the people on the ground hope. All right? So it's nothing new. In fact, USAID, which is now being brought into rain, has been doing that on a small scale. So I don't mind why people are getting too upset over the idea, except for the fact that perhaps he was intimating that they're going to have to temporarily relocate. If I understood him correctly, he hasn't said, we're banishing you. He opens up the possibility. And don't forget, Gaza has been shut off from any freedom of emigration or movement for over 70 years. I think they should get a chance to decide if they want to live in Gaza or not, and not have Mr. Trump or Mr. EU or Mr. UN or anything else tell them that they can't go anywhere because they have to stay there. So on the first level, and I'll limit it to two comments now, I'm not taken aback. That fits into general policy. The second thing, of course, is that basically what Mr. Trump is saying is nothing has worked over the past 50 or so years. No two-state solution, no disengagement, any other plan, Oslo, any accords like that. And I think he still believes that the Abraham Accords could work. And so he's saying, let's try something along the lines of the Abraham Accords and the prosperity plan, and let's recreate Gaza. That is an amazing idea. And the point is, of course, is that 70% of the Gazan Arabs define themselves as refugees. So they don't want to be there either. Now, the problem is, of course, they want to come back into Israel. That's another problem. But in essence, 70% of the Gazans over the years do not want to be there. So all of a sudden, someone comes along like President Trump and says, you know what, at least we're going to relocate you. Maybe you'll get to know Indonesia better or whatever. And the things will arrange themselves in a development over the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so what you're saying as we look at this is there is certainly a difference between a forced relocation and maybe the idea, and I think this is what President Trump was going for, is that he could make an offer so attractive that they couldn't necessarily turn it down by creating another space for them to live, to raise their families, to exist peacefully. Now, this is an option, and that is certainly different from a forced relocation, isn't it?
It is, and that's how I understood it. I mean, President Trump sometimes... I use the example that you're at a train station waiting for the local and all of a sudden the express whizzes by. So sometimes it goes a little bit too fast, maybe, and maybe not all the words and the sentences are completely organized. I'm sure that he surprised a lot of people on his staff as well. But okay, let's give it a month or two and see what we can come up with. But the shock value, of course, I look at it positively, and some other people look at it negatively. But the essence of the idea is, can we change a group of 2 million people from supporting terror, mobilizing for terror, and living off the dole from UNRWA and other NGOs for years and years? Can they take themselves in hand and create a new political and economic reality for themselves? If they can't, then don't blame Israel if we have to react the way we do when they attack us.
I love that analogy. You're waiting for the local and the express flies by, and that is President Trump. He's the express. He might get ahead of his advisors, but regardless of what you think of President Trump, he certainly has an intuition and an idea, and these things will work. So maybe if we don't completely say, okay, he's got this plan and it's completely fleshed out and this is the way it's going to work, well obviously that is not necessarily the case just right yet, but a little bit of forward thinking, a little bit of creative thinking is a good idea, because what do they say? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. He is just trying something new, right?
I would agree with you. And I think because so many lives are involved and so many businesses and homes and education, I'm like, you can go through the whole list of what people live a life about that could be so much better. Instead of being Islamist jihadis, why don't you calm down and let's see if we can arrange so that we can talk? Because up until now, with their poor status, with their underdevelopment, with their poverty, they're not going anywhere. And this perhaps is an option of another direction that will move them a lot closer to where they want to be, but also assure that Israel is not going to be endangered or its security threatened.
Well, Winky, very interesting the way this is playing out. Prime Minister Netanyahu, sitting there to the side, even he somewhat seemed a little surprised by some of these comments that President Trump made. But going along with it, if we look at how this plays for Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel, as in your role as kind of the guide for us in all things Israeli politics, what does this relationship with President Trump and this declaration mean for Prime Minister Netanyahu?
Well, look, I was reflecting on this a couple of hours ago. I was thinking to myself that Israel is a country with less than 10 million people. Okay? And that's probably the average population of most capitals of the world with another city involved. And yet we're honored and privileged to be treated very well by America, very well by this incoming administration. And most administrations previously, even with the disputes, we have a very strong supporting group in what I call the pro-Zionist Christian community. And I think it's an amazing development in the history of mankind that this relationship exists. And it could only, if given the proper treatment and lower the flames of raw anti-Semitism that we've seen, or this crazy anti-Zionism that we've seen on campuses in the streets, if we lower the temperature on this, our two countries can be the leaders, not only the free world as we know from the 1950s and 60s, but of mankind in the image of morals and ethics that come from faith-based values. And these things are tremendously important for the next 100 years. And I'm very glad to be able to live and see this development developing, burgeoning, coming to fruition. And I hope it could only get better.
Well, one final question for you as we continue to look at this situation. You are coming to us from your home in Shiloh, which is in the area of Judea and Samaria. That's what we call it because that's what the Bible calls it, but the world calls it the West Bank area. If you look at what is taking place in Gaza, does that translate at all into what might be the future politically there in the West Bank area? I mean, of course, that has been so-called an occupied area, but we've seen what the Palestinians have done with an occupied area, with the tunnels and the rockets from Gaza. Does this maybe portend some type of future for what could happen in the West Bank when we look at this from a political perspective between Israel and the Palestinians in the United States?
I'll take the posture of a optimistic realist. That question means, will the Arabs release themselves from 100 years of violence and terror, rejection, and non-recognition of Israel as the Jewish state in any border configuration from the time of the mandate, from the time of the 67 war, from the time that we're living in now. And I'd have to say that I doubt it, which means Israel has to be prepared that the Arabs of Judea and Samaria, the West Bank as it's called, although I would suggest to anybody listening to us not to deposit any money or investments in the West, in this West Bank. We have to be prepared, unfortunately, for security considerations. Iran is smuggling weapons in through Jordan into the area constantly. We've even seen some drones being flown over the border and dropping off weapons. So we have to be eternally vigilant. To borrow a phrase, we all have to be watchmen on the walls. And I only hope that this new administration of Mr. Trump and Hegseth and Rubio and all the other people will allow Israel to practice and get the means for its security and practice, put into practice what has to be done to assure that people live. And as you know, and the visitors that you've taken here, we're not only Jews here. We're Druze, we're Arabs, mm-hmm. we're Bedouin, we're Christians, we're Muslim. The state is multi-citizen, multi-faith, and I think that the Bible coming to life in this country once again is a thing that should be protected by all God-fearing men.
Well, it certainly should, and that's an excellent sentiment from you. And I guess just a final follow-up to that, your optimism, you said you taking the position of a cautious optimist. We look at what is taking place in America right now with this new administration, certainly gives us reason for hope there for a realistic system that will work in the Middle East, doesn't it?
It does, and I think the people involved, the policies involved, and the belief in getting a world to be better with the least involvement necessary is the best policy, and it should be supported by all.
Winky Medad reporting for Prophecy Today. Winky, as always, we appreciate you coming on and giving us your opinion, especially as you live there in the land and you see what is taking place, you follow it, and you report back to us. Thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me on. Goodbye to you and our listeners.
Great job as always, Winky. You know, Psalm 2:6 says, "Yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion." And that's a powerful passage of scripture the psalmist gives to us. Actually, it's a very prophetic passage of scripture. We're reading about the eternal kingdom, the establishment of the kingdom to be set up in Jerusalem, the eternal kingdom to be ruled over by the King of Kings, Jesus Christ. And as you take a journey through the Psalms with the kingdom in mind and notice how it comes to pass, verses 1 reveals that the heathens, Gentiles, will rise to power as the leaders of the world. These Gentile world powers will continue to gain power and control in the world all the way up to the Lord's return. Bible prophecy is very relevant for today. When we come back, the Legacy Series with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend. Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. So much is happening, Rick, but there is a lot more happening in the Middle East now, too, for us as a ministry and for people that want to get back to going to the Holy Land. And tell us what's happening and what are the opportunities.
Well, Jimmy, as you know, I just got back from Israel, and it was a wonderful trip that we had. And, you know, now is the time to go back to Israel. I think things are security-wise, it's safe to be in Israel, and it's just a wonderful time to show you support from Israel, but to be there at this time, at this historic time. And Jimmy, we've got trips coming up in March, and we've got a trip in May. Those are two trips that are planned, and we would love to have you go with us. Call our office, 423-825-6247. Give us your information. I'll give you a call back, and we would love to talk about taking you to Israel, looking at Israel past, present, and prophetic, and seeing where Jesus walked. And it's just the greatest trip that every Christian should do at least once in their life.
Well, today, as we begin our study of 2 Peter, Dr. DeYoung will finish up by look at the book of Matthew, especially Matthew chapter 24, which is the Olivet Discourse. In today's study, Dr. DeYoung will reveal what he thinks is the most significant prophecy outside of the Ezekiel 37 prophecy of Jews returning to the land of Israel. Please take your Bible and go with me to the Olivet Discourse in Matthew chapter 24.
Matthew 24, the scene. It's there on the Temple Mount. It's there right beside the temple. At the time of Matthew 24, the temple was 15 stories high. Limestones laid upon limestone, not concreted in, but covered with 24-karat flexible gold to hold it steady. It was a beautiful building. As the sun would rise in the east and set in the west, the gold-plated temple would gleam on the Jerusalem skyline. The rabbi said, if you'd never seen Herod's temple, you'd never seen a beautiful building. Now that's the scene. Jesus has been up teaching in the temple. He's going to go across the Kidron Valley to the Mount of Olives and continue his teaching. This is the third day he's come up to the temple while he's staying over there with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus in Bethany. He walks out, and old Peter and John run up to him. You seen this building, Lord? This is an amazing building. You know what Jesus said? You got Matthew chapter 24? Look what he says here. Matthew chapter 24, and look at verses 1 and 2. Matthew chapter 24, and let me show you what the text says. He walks out, and Jesus went out, verse 1, he went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, see ye not all of these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And there's not a stone upon a stone. Jesus makes the statement. I could bring any archaeologist to give testimony, and they would have to say, there's not a stone upon a stone on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Jesus makes this statement, this prophecy, 30 AD. 70 AD, 40 years later, is when the prophecy was fulfilled. Why am I telling you this? Because prophecy fulfilled gives us a basis upon which we can understand and believe all other prophecies got to be. Why did they burn the temple down? Why did they tear the temple down and not a stone upon a stone fulfilling Jesus' prophecy? Well, in 70 AD, after the Roman Empire had burned down, Nero, 64 AD, lets it burn down. He's the one that gave the sentence of death to Paul, gave the sentence of death to Peter. They die before the destruction of the temple. But in essence, what happened was they took a man to replace Nero. His name was Vespasian. And he was controlling the Middle East. And his son was General Titus. And they met at Caesarea as Vespasian was getting on the ship to go over to Rome to take over the Roman Empire. He told his son Titus, go back to Jerusalem, destroy the temple, devastate the city, and disperse the Jews to the four corners of the earth. And by the way, after you've destroyed the temple, get the treasures in the temple and bring them to me in Rome. What were the treasures of the temple? I don't know what their worth was, but it was 50 tons of gold and silver. 50 tons of gold and silver in the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. He wanted that. Vespasian needed that to rebuild the Roman Empire. You ever seen the ruins of the Colosseum? In 71 AD, with that money he got out of the temple in Jerusalem, he built the Colosseum. He rebuilt the whole Roman Empire. Have you ever seen the Arch of Titus in Rome? The Arch of Titus shows the Roman soldiers coming back with the menorah, the table of showbread, the silver trumpets. He needed that money. And so Jesus is prophecy of the destruction of the temple came true exactly. And there's not a stone upon a stone on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And then notice what he says in verse 4. Notice what he says in this sermon. It's the most important sermon. It's the most prophetic, profound prophetic conference ever held. Verse 4, and Jesus answered and he said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. Verse 5, for many shall come in my name, saying that I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Look at verse 11. And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. Look at verse 24. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and do great signs and wonders
wonders in so much that they would be possible they should deceive the very elect. You know what the signs and wonders are? Miracles. And he talks about the fact that miracles are mostly satanic. Where do you get that, Dion? Chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. Chapter 16 of the book of Revelation. Chapter 13 is talking about Satan, Antichrist, and a false prophet, the satanic trinity. What are they going to do? Perform miracles. You know how they get the armies of the world together in Jerusalem? Chapter 16, verses 13 to 16. Signs, wonders, and miracles. When they're thrown into the lake of fire, the false prophet and the Antichrist, because they had performed miracles. A satanic miracle activity. We're living now by faith, not by sight. What's the definition of faith? Things hoped for, things not seen. You see a miracle, that's by sight. We're living by faith. By faith, the Word of God. And how we get it? Well, the faith comes from the Word of God, and we hear it and we study it. And so that's what he's saying here. But deception. Notice that fifth verse again. Notice what it says there. For many shall come in my name, saying that I am Christ, and shall deceive many. You know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing that there's millions of Muslims coming to know Christ. There are pockets of evangelism in the Muslim world. Some are coming to know Christ, but not millions. In fact, some prophecy teachers, he wrote a whole book about millions of Muslims coming to know Christ. And you know what he gave the testimony of? He said, here's how they're coming to know Christ. They're seeing Jesus Christ. That's not true. Nobody's seeing Jesus Christ today. Look what it says. If you don't believe me, how about Jesus? Will we believe him? Look at verse 23. And then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. Go to verse 26. This is Jesus speaking. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers. Believe it not. He's not appearing. He will not appear until he steps back on the Mount of Olives in the city of Jerusalem. That's what he said. Deception. What does that make the world ready for? The Antichrist. Deception. One more and I'll close. Look here in verse 15. And this is Jesus speaking. And by the way, he's going to make another confirmation of the fact that Daniel wrote the book of Daniel. And when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. The abomination of desolation. Where does the Antichrist do? The Antichrist confirms a peace treaty. That starts the clock ticking on the 7-year period of time. That's Daniel 9:27. And he, the Antichrist, shall confirm, that does not mean sign, but confirm, strengthen, make stronger, a covenant, a treaty, and then that starts the clock ticking on the 7-year period of time. And so we see the rapture and we see the Antichrist comes on the scene through deception. Where does the Antichrist go? He goes to Rome. The word beast, the name for Antichrist in the book of Revelation, is spoken of 8 times in chapter 17 of the book of Revelation. That's the false church headquartered in Rome, Italy. He burns it up. He brings human government into play to wipe out the false church. He leaves Rome. He comes over to Jerusalem. When he gets to Jerusalem, there's a temple there. He walks into the temple, 2 Thessalonians 2:4. When he goes into the temple, the Antichrist goes into the Holy of Holies. When he gets in the Holy of Holies, he sits down and claims to be God. That's the abomination of desolation. That's what he's talking about here. Daniel chapter 11 tells us of this abomination of desolation. But there has to be a temple. There's not a temple there now. It's a gold dome building. But you know what's been going on for 25 years, and I've documented it for 25 years? 28,000 men who claim to be priests have been gathered from all over the world. They've been in Jerusalem studying the priestly duties. They have made every implement, the Temple Institute, Israel Ariel, Chaim Richman, both great rabbis. They have made every single piece of furniture for the temple. The table of showbread, the altar of incense. By the way, they made the menorah with 100 pounds of pure gold. It's in the Western Wall Plaza, ready to go up into the temple complex. And I talked to 3 men, 2 rabbis, and 1 Jewish activist who went to the Ark of the Covenant. The Temple Institute knows exactly where the Ark of the Covenant is. I asked them, why did they bring it out? They said, we will when we have a place to put it. They have to have a temple up there.
Now, do you understand if you've got all the men trained to operate the temple, you have all the implements for the temple, it actually would only take you about 6 months to build the temple. They don't even need the temple. All they need the altar to start the sacrificial system. But the location for that next temple is going to be that gold dome building. They got to get rid of that. All of these, this is what Jesus is talking about. Friends, I've documented everything I've been talking about for the preparations of the temple. This is a DVD called Ready to Rebuild, Revisited. I used to have an old one. This is brand new. And it is exclusive footage of how the people are preparing to build the temple. In order for Matthew chapter 24, verse 15 to be fulfilled, there has to be a temple in the city of Jerusalem. In my opinion, this is the most significant prophecy. Outside of the Jews coming into the land, the preparations to build the temple and the reality could go up at any moment, the most significant prophecy in all the Word. Do you know what happened the other day? The Sanhedrin, the 70 wise Jewish scholars, they've been reformed. The Sanhedrin named a high priest. His name is Barak Kahana. Barak Kahana, son of Rabbi Meir Kahana, who's that Jew that I was witnessing to in my office in New York City, who said his desire was to rebuild the temple. And now his son has been named the high priest for the next temple. That's where we are. And Jesus was the one that Peter said, I want to stir up your pure minds, because apostasy is going to be rampant. I want to teach the Word. I went through Matthew to help you recognize how key Matthew is into our study, and Matthew 24 in particular. That's where we are. And the rapture happens before all the prophecies of Matthew 24, many more that I haven't looked at, will be fulfilled. Father, thank you for the privilege of studying your Word. Thank you for these people who have come to do exactly that with us. The purpose of study of the Word is to mature. Mature in a time, and that's what the manual that Peter wrote, mature in a time when we're going to have to face apostate teaching, false teaching, as we await the coming of Jesus Christ. I'm so grateful that you put in the hearts and mind of Peter to write this manual. Thank you, dear Lord, for doing that. And we praise your name for how we're able to have the right and the privilege to study these truths. Let us apply them to our lives.
Please remember that Matthew 24 is referring to the second coming of Jesus Christ. The disciples ask Jesus for signs of his second coming, not the rapture. Remember, the second coming happens at least 7 years after the rapture. According to our study today, that rapture could actually happen today or at any moment in the future. Should the rapture not happen this next week, please join us for our study of 2 Peter, a manual for the end times. Be sure to join us next week.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series. We will have question and answer coming up next week, and someone sent in a question about the Olivet Discourse and Matthew chapter 24. We got to take a break, and when we come back, Rick and I will take a look at the book right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Ruth Kramer with Mission Network News. U.S. foreign aid is on a 90-day pause. Although Ukraine gets the lion's share, Eric Mock with the Slava Gospel Association says ministry in Ukraine has hardly been impacted by the freeze, though SGA does expect a growing number of Ukrainians because of it.
A huge number of people are actually coming to churches. We call them centers of heat and hope when the electricity's off.
SGA works within a local church network, independent of any government-level restrictions or political changes. That strategy works well, and it's one Mock prefers over others.
Sending aid over and over and over without a message of hope is putting a finger in the dike with leaks all over the place.
Instead, Mock says ministries must proclaim the gospel and its hope.
Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. And a former abortion clinic is now home to pro-life ministry Life International. It seems unlikely, even shocking, but Life International's Kurt Dillinger says it's exactly what God intended.
Many women come to our building here who had abortions in their past, and they'll come and they'll want to see the building. We get to communicate to them, look what God did with the brick and mortar. He changed it from what it was to what it is today. A place of death was turned into a place of life. He wants to do the same thing in your heart. You are more important to him than brick and mortar. This is just a message to you, how much he loves you.
Pray for women and men who've been hurt by abortion or considering it to know God's love for their babies and for them. Thanks for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener-supported by people just like you. So by giving to Mission Network News, you enable us to keep the stories of God's kingdom coming. And together, the Great Commission happens. Look for links at missionnews.org. That's missionnews.org. I'm Ruth Kramer.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word. Rick, great program today so far. We're talking about a Gentile world leader sitting with the present leader of Israel in the headquarters of Washington, D.C., in the White House. And he makes a proclamation to rebuild the Gaza Strip and come up with a scenario for creating peace in the Middle East. Now, let me read this news report that came out. Iran's supreme leader has appeared to condemn United States President Donald J. Trump's proposal for the U.S. to take over Gaza and turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei accused the U.S. of redrawing the map of the world. Speaking to Iranian Air Force officers in Tehran, the Supreme Leader also suggested that Iran may threaten the U.S. with unspecified actions just days after the Islamic Republic unveiled a potentially nuclear-capable missile. The Americans sit, this is the words of Ayatollah Khamenei, the Americans sit redrawing the map of the world, but only on paper, as it has no basis in reality. They make statements about Iran, us, he's saying, express opinions and issue threats. If they threaten us, we will threaten them in return. If they act on their threats, we will act on ours. If they violate the security of our nation, we will without a doubt respond in kind. There's been no response to this from Washington, D.C. or Israel. But in light of what we've talked about today, Rick, give me your thoughts.
Well, Jimmy, as you look at that statement, and we can take that and relate it to what we know that the Bible says is going to take place in the end times. In Ezekiel 38, talks about the nation of Persia, it says there in Ezekiel 38:5, which we know is modern day Iran. We know that they are going to be a part of a coalition of nations that come against Israel. Now, we can take that, and we don't know exactly how God's plan is going to come to fruition in the future. We just see the pieces being moved around on a chessboard right now. That's all we see. But as we see these things taking place, we can certainly see a future in which Iran will come against Israel because of what is taking place there in Israel, in the Middle East, and Gaza in specifically. And so we can certainly see how that is setting the stage for God's plan to come to fruition from Ezekiel 38, can't we?
Yes. You know, I think that personally, my opinion is that President Trump has thrown out some statements about the Gaza Strip, trying to test the waters of the world, Rick. So when you see these things, I don't know if he was bluffing. I know that some he's backed off a little bit. He's gotten mixed reaction in Israel. He certainly has gotten the reaction from the Islamic world, which consists of not only Persia and Ezekiel 38, which is modern day Iran, but that's Afghanistan and Pakistan, and then all the other nations, Libya, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Sudan, 220 million altogether Muslims that, you know, maybe this is a part of that hook that's put in the jaw of this animal down the road to bring these nations against Israel. But, you know, as we look at that, you have talked to our broadcast partners today about a process, and it is setting the process for the future for the Antichrist to come on the scene. And if Donald Trump is doing a lot of things that the Antichrist is going to do in the future, I'm not saying that he is, but wouldn't you agree that he's doing some things that he's becoming a very worldwide leader? He loves the military, which there are 27 names for the Antichrist in the scriptures. And being a lover of military, being a worldwide leader, those are only a few of the names about him. And I don't know that, you know, people are not going to like that, but it is something for us to look at that he's a prototype, right, for the Antichrist.
Well, Jimmy, we can certainly look at that. And I mean, we could see at this point what Donald Trump is doing. Many of those things are beneficial to the nation of Israel and potentially beneficial here in the United States. I think we talked with Colonel Bob McGinnis, and, you know, we are cautiously optimistic about the direction of that the country is heading in right now. But certainly the idea of a personality like Donald Trump that in the future may be something along the lines of what the Antichrist will be, taking over the world, the whole world kind of aligning and behind a personality. We can certainly see that with what is taking place right now in the world.
Yes. And according to Daniel chapter 9, the Antichrist in the future, the little prince that is to come, will come from the revived Roman Empire or the people that destroyed the temple in 70 AD, and that was the Roman Empire. So I again, don't misunderstand, but a lot of the things that President Trump is doing, and like you said, Rick, it's very beneficial to Israel, which the first 3.5 years of the tribulation period, that will be the case also. And he's doing some things that really are setting the stage for a future world leader, and I don't know where that person would come from at this present moment in time. So it's left to be. Again, it just proves to us that we need to study God's word. We need to understand that God's plan is going to be revealed after the rapture of the church, Rick. And, you know, you and I were talking earlier in the breaks that nobody can hurry up God's plan. God has a plan for when that rapture will take place. And what we need to do is be prepared about how we live our lives, living a holy, productive, pure life in an unholy world. Rick, great job on the program today. There's so much happening. I can hardly wait until next week's program.
Jimmy, it's so certainly interesting to see how all these things are taking place right now in the world, how they relate to what God says is going to happen in the future, and what we should do to be prepared and pure and productive in preparation for what is to happen in the future.
Yes. Will Christians see the Antichrist? No, at least not in his role described in Revelation. The removal of the restrainer's influence precedes the revealing of the Antichrist. Evil is hindered right now, but once the church age ends, the obstruction will be gone and the rebellion will have the upper hand, at least temporarily. And at the end of the tribulation, the Lord Jesus will come and overthrow the Antichrist with the breath of his mouth and destroy him by the splendor of his coming. The ultimate doom of evil is sure. Folks, with everything that we see today, the rapture of the church can't be far away. Let's keep looking up until...
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Jay Johnson inviting you to join us again next week for more of Prophecy Today.